You are listening to the Improv Save My Life podcast, brought to you on Bits, the Boston Improv Talk Station. All right, welcome to episode 81 of the Improv Save My Life podcast. I'm your host, Tom Boyer. This podcast is brought to you on Bits, the Boston Improv Talk Station. I'm joined by somewhat frequent co-host recently, Laura Murley. What's going on, Laura?
Hi, Tom. I'm good. I'm here. I'm happy to be here.
Me and Laura are in a bunch of things together. We are in Robot Arms, which is an independent improv group. We are also in Monotone, which is a two-person group. We are just started recently. It's going pretty good. Andy Devlin is our coach. We are in between house team runs, but we've both been Improv Asylum house teams cast members. You are also in Improv Jones, which performs the first, third, and fifth Saturday, if there's a fifth Saturday of every month, at the Riot Theater, correct?
Yeah, like every other week.
And you are going to be in Hooverville at the Riot Theater in Fridays in June at 10 p.m.
Yeah.
Guest this week is Mac Gostile. What's going on, Mac?
What's up, Tom? Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Mac is an associate producer at IB. He is also a producer of the College Comedy Festival, CCF, as it's called in the industry, and also the Boston Comedy Arts Festival. He's also a cast member of Bump, the Boston Unscripted Musical Project.
Boston's Unscripted Musical Project. It's a mouthful.
And the family show at IB, and also All Access Improv at IB. And he's also, you producing the My Musical OK Cupid Date?
I'm the lead in that. So it's a, can I dispatch it real quick? So it's a 25 to 30 minute, like, scripted musical piece about Jacob Russell Snyder, who's a music director in Proud Boston, his, like, terrible OK Cupid experiences. So it's absolutely hilarious.
That's awesome.
I'll just say a meth fairy comes and sings my penis to sleep at some point. So don't miss that.
So this is a true story.
It's absolutely a true story. Okay. And it's, so it's like, it's going to be about 40 minutes of improv, followed by 25, 30 minutes of a musical sketch. So it's gonna be a good night.
Sweet. I have a soft spot for musical improv.
Me too.
My bread and butter, baby.
No, we had Mish on a couple weeks ago.
She was telling me about that.
Yeah, she's a really impressive person. Yeah,
she's a force you reckon with in a 4'10" body.
There was just a random, like, we were just talking, and then she was like, and then I was working with Patch Adams, and I'm like,
yeah. She told me that before.
Patch Adams is a real person.
Yeah. Not only that, but, like, they actually do, like, you can literally, like, most people can sign up to do this thing for 6 months where they go to a foreign country and, like, help kids laugh that are in, like, you know, villages and hospitals and stuff like that. Yeah. And you apparently only pay, like, a couple hundred dollars, and you can have, like, a really cool experience.
She took his teaching seriously, too.
So what country did she go to?
I don't know.
Somewhere in the east of here.
I just wonder, like, how that works out, if there's, like, one, a language barrier, but also I've heard that, like, culturally, comedy can be very different across cultures, so it seems like that might be really challenging.
Clowning is the international language.
I mean, sure, there's different forms of clowning, but, like, when someone does something goofy or there's, like, funny expressions facially, like, that's kind of, that's a universal, you know what I mean?
That's true.
So, I don't know, yeah, sure, there's, like, different, like, sure forms of comedy and different, like, aspects of comedy are probably more funny for other people, but, like,
yeah,
I think if you're a goofball and a ham, like, pretty much make anyone laugh.
And I guess especially children probably find any sort of, like, over-exaggerated thing really funny.
And that's where they got you. That's where they tug at the heartstrings and Patch Adams, right? Those kids with cancer just, like, bawling in a good way because they're laughing so hard. Bawling through laughing.
So, Mac, where are you from originally?
So, I'm from Santa Barbara, California. Ways away. And, yeah, that's where I grew up, in beautiful sunshine. And then, for some reason, I made my way out here for college.
Where'd you go to college?
Gordon College, on the North Shore.
Oh my god, I'm always learning about more colleges in this area. It's crazy.
Many.
Yeah.
Gordon actually has an awesome improv team called the Sweaty Tooths Mad Men. And I was a cast member there for 3 years with Ryan Coyle, who was in IB for a couple of years and has moved to LA.
Was that your first experience with improv?
That was my first experience, yeah. So Santa Barbara was devoid of improv for me, which is crazy to think about. I did a lot of musical theater, and like I was really into choir. My choir in high school actually sang at Carnegie Hall.
Ooh.
Sang the Brahms German Requiem. So that was really cool. So I was really into music, and I was really into acting. But like the fusion of like improv and musical improv didn't happen until I lived here. So.
Cool.
Did you like improv immediately, or was it like a process?
Oh, man. So it's so in line with my personality. It's nauseating. I think that's what's crazy to me is that like, I think for a lot of people improv is really daunting, and sure it was absolutely daunting for me too. But I think for a lot of people, it's unnatural to like have to spontaneously come up with things, connect with strangers, make other strangers laugh, like be big and over the top with your mm-hmm. personality, and like. Those are a lot of things that I think, like, that just kind of play naturally with who I am.
I think that's a personality type, and I think there's a lot of people with that personality type that don't know about improv and will never discover improv.
Yeah, or just think of it as being more like theater than it actually is, and are not into it for that reason.
Exactly. When I used to drink, that's all I used to do at bars was, like, try to come up with stupid shit all the time.
Yeah.
And I love doing that, and people seem to get a kick out of it until I get annoying. I had no idea that improv existed. Or I knew of it, but I didn't know what it was exactly. I just wish I could get out there. It would become more. It's getting more mainstream, but I wish it would even become more mainstream than it is.
Yeah,
it absolutely. Yeah, no, it's slowly making its way there, and I think it's one of those art forms that's like so valuable for the live experience. But I've been talking to people about this recently, and that like the fact that there's no lasting product.
Right.
You know what I mean? And you can't fall back and say, here is my body of work.
Yeah.
It's getting someone to come. Watch you create, and that's like it's just such a different thing than most art forms.
Even if somebody tapes your best show, it's not going to come on.
It's not, not at all.
No,
yeah, it's not the
like,
same experience.
One of the things that I really love about it is that it's like in that way, it's like the old school communal experience. Because now, like movies, we tend to all watch by ourselves, like in our rooms, and like shows and most other media is like become very like personal. But like to see an improv show, it's always like a group of people like coming together, like. Actually, like, in the same space.
It's so true, and it's something that I'm, like, super passionate about, the fact that technology is ruining us. So there's, like, I could get into a whole wave of shit, but there's, like, technological, I won't go far beyond this, I promise. There's, like, technology instrumentalists and technology determinists. The instrumentalists think we're using it, like for our own gain, and it's helping us be more productive, and the determinists think it's kind of, like, taking us over. I'm definitely a determinist. So I think, like, to be able to be in, like, a shared space, like, creating something on the spot and have it be, like, a constant interactive ebb and flow from audience to performer is, like, such a valuable experience and something that we need so badly right now as a society. And I can't. Like, someone could talk me, like, and, like, you know, change my mind about a lot of things, but that's one of those things that, like, I believe that's an imperative right now, so...
Well, I do think there is some middle ground, though, in between, like, we're all getting taken over by robots and...
No, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, of course, you can connect with people, like, you can like, share everything so quickly, you can communicate so much more effectively, but I just think, like, as far as people having face-to-face interaction and the value of, like, interpersonal communication, I think, like, that's where improv plays a big role, so...
It is getting scary, because people don't talk to each other. Like, people are, and I'm the same way. You're annoyed if the phone rings. You're like, oh God, what's happening? You know, like, just text me, Mom.
Yeah,
what
exactly.
the hell?
It's not necessary. I'll wait. I'll end the call and I'll text you.
Yeah, it gives me anxiety when my phone rings.
But I feel like it's becoming more, it's just going to keep going in that direction unless there's going to be more than one person standing up.
Wait.
Just one man stands up against the forces of technology.
Can I say one more nerdy thing?
Yeah.
And I'm not this kind of person. That's why it's so funny. But I, like, wrote essays about this shit in college.
You're a little bit of this kind of person.
I am. You brought it out of me. So there's this idea called the singularity. Have you guys heard of this?
Not really.
Yeah,
okay.
But re-explain it to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So it's this dude. I don't remember the dude's name. Whatever. He's not important. His name's not important. His theory is. So the idea of the singularity is that I wish the audience could see my hand gestures right now. But basically, picture two diagonal lines that are going up toward each other. And there's a point where they have to meet. And both of these lines are humans' productivity and machines' productivity. And basically, the argument is that within the next 20 to 30 years, he predicts, these two lines are going to intersect, and there's going to be no way for humans to become more efficient or machines to become more efficient without them, like, teaming together.
Don't get me started on AI.
Yeah. So it's basically AI.
Teaming together, though?
Like the idea that, like, we'll have to have technology integrated into our minds.
Oh,
in order to function at, like, the same capacity with the same increasing efficiency. That
It's already going that way.
Well,
is it Google Glasses?
Yeah, but there's... I don't want Google Glasses. I have no interest in that. But, like, there's some things that I do think would be sick nasty to have. Like, I would love to put more memory space in my brain because I feel like sometimes...
I could use it.
Yeah, I like, there's so much that I want to know and do, but sometimes there's just not the space. And if I could, like, also put a USB in my ear and just, like...
There's so many people I just want to remember that I can't.
Yeah, I don't know
Tracy.
Who people are unless I see them, like, five times a day.
It's true.
You know what else would come in handy?
What?
Robot arms.
Yeah.
Hey, shameless plug.
What?
But I don't know. Yeah, I could talk about that for an hour, so let's not do that. But I don't know. It's just like, and it's another reason though why improv is so important. Like, it's a shared, communal, collaborative, like, explorative experience that, like, you don't find anywhere else right now.
Until the robots start improvising.
Until the robots. We're going to be performing for an audience of robots in the 20 years.
That's so good.
Another thing that I think is really cool about it, which you don't get doing a lot of other activities, is, like, there's such a wide variety of people that it draws in.
Yeah.
So you interact with, like, so many different types of people that you may never, like, get to know otherwise.
It's so true. And working at Improv Boston, obviously, I'm working every day with our comedy school administrator there. And so, like, I'm seeing all of the students come in every day for classes. I'm seeing all the kids that we attract for summer comedy camps. And, like, I'm realizing that, like, we have such a spread of people that we're helping with improv, like, from accountants and, like, businessy lawyer types to, like, people who are kind of down and out, don't really know what they're doing with their lives and want to do something different. Like, and to see people from, like, such disparate, like, parts and mental states, like, come together and be able to, like, work with each other and start from being, like, completely sheltered and scared to just being, like, so open and vulnerable at the end of, like, even a week is incredible. And I think it shows, like, the power of the art form.
So. Yeah, definitely. So you, I know, like, a lot of, like, Rosanna, for example, is a producer of the Comedy Lab there, but that's not her profession. You actually work.
Yeah, so I'm actually one of, like, the five or six salaried people at Improv Boston. There's a very small team of us.
How'd you do that?
How did I manage that?
Yeah.
Oh, man. So, yeah, so that's actually a pretty easy tale. So I graduated college in 2013, and I was in the College Comedy Festival with Gordon College, as I mentioned earlier.
CCF.
CCF. You got the acronym. So I was in the College Comedy Festival. I did that for 2 years, I think. And then when I was a senior, we won. And so people
What was the team?
The Sweaty Tooth Mad Men. So, yeah, we won. And I remember I did a scene where I literally had to speak only in song lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, like, I don't say this often because I'm a pretty humble person, but, like, I, like, slayed that scene. Like, we got, like, fives across the board. And, like, so people, like, remembered me as that dude. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. And after the panel discussion, I went up and talked to Dina Chris and, like, Mike Dakota and, like, I was just, and Zach Ward, and I was trying to, like, just, like, you know, see how I could get involved in the theater. Ended up interviewing with Mike right after I graduated, who's the artistic director of Improv Boston, for the listeners out there. And he was looking for, like, an artistic director intern, basically, because he had just been hired on, like, 10 months before that. And, you know, there was the Zach Ward coming out of Improv Boston and getting a new managing director. And so Mike had, like, so much stuff on his plate. And so I ended up being, like, his intern, basically. So I was helping him with a bunch of tasks that were kind of lower level, more administrative tasks that he wasn't able to really deal with because he was doing artistic direction stuff. So I worked with Mike for 8 months as his, like, basically personal intern, all the while having an advertising job in the South End, which I learned a lot from but didn't really, like, find myself a great fit for.
Advertising interests me, though. Jack McNamara was just on.
He's a copywriter, right? And I think the idea of it's interesting, but if you don't care about your clients, or if, like me, you work under a really suffocating boss, it can be a really hard environment. It's super cutthroat.
It would be really depressing if, like, it was a product that you didn't believe in or were actively against, and you had to, like, come up with a campaign to get people to buy it.
People can tell when you're trying to pitch them something or explain your ideas, and, like, your heart's not in it. Like, that shows. So I did that for, like, 8 months, and finally I was literally at my wit's end with this job. I hated it. I literally quit and then just, like, did everything I could to help Mike and the team produce the College Comedy Festival, and I, like, did really well, and then Mike hired me on February of 2014. So I basically, they kind of created a position for me, which was super cool.
That's awesome.
Alongside Emily Holland, who was the other associate producer at the time, who's now in LA. And,
She's super talented.
Awesome girl. And yeah, so like I kind of became more than just Mike's assistant. I started helping a lot with, you know, like producing the festivals, but also doing the advertising marketing for the theater, performer relations, all that kind of stuff too. So. It's been a journey, definitely.
So I have a question. When you were doing the song lyrics thing, how did that work?
Oh, man. So I'm one of those people who remembers song lyrics.
I do, too.
I don't know why. Like
I want to figure out how this works and then try something here.
We should. There's so many people that hear songs and they don't know who the artist is. They're like, oh, it's like, as soon as I hear a song, I have to know the artist. And not only that, but I, like, remember all the lyrics that were sung, too.
I am not that kind of person.
So you're one of the other.
I am the other in this situation.
So it was literally a three-minute scene, and there were three improvisers that were to be in the scene, two of which had free reign to do whatever they wanted, and then I had to enter into the scene and only speak in song lyrics. So that was what it was a judge's challenge as the final round of the College Comedy Festival. Apparently I did well. So.
Let's, I don't know how this is going to go over. It might end really quickly, but we're going to have Laura name an artist, and then one of us will start a conversation with some song lyrics by that artist.
Just by that artist, all right. This rides so heavily on which artist you choose.
Oh.
It doesn't, we can move on from other artists just to give us some place to start.
Yeah, okay, so the first two lines have to be of that artist, and then move on?
Yeah.
Does that work?
Wait, hold on. Sorry, I'm just going to... What if you gave us an artist, we had as much of a conversation as we can with that artist, and then as soon as we, like, suck, just, like, change the artist. And
yes.
We'll just
yell out
so
artists.
I can just... Well, I won't do it when you suck. That's not appropriate. I'll do it...
we want to be supportive here.
Yeah, exactly. This is a happy atmosphere here. I'll do it when I feel right about it.
Sounds good.
Fair enough.
Okay.
All right. So, yeah, let's try to maintain a consistent conversation topic. What are we talking about, first of all?
Okay, you are talking about Tasty Cakes.
Tasty Cakes.
And the artist is Shakira.
I'm off tonight, and my hips don't lie.
Underneath your clothes.
There's a she-wolf in my closet.
Shakira.
Neil Young.
Old man, just take a look at my cake. It's a lot like yours.
I got nothing. I was going to say something about on this harvest.
You got a heart of gold, man.
All right, let's keep going. All right.
All right. Eminem.
Tom, are your palms sweaty? Those knees are a little weak. Are your arms heavy? Oh, God, there's vomit on his sweater already.
Mom, spaghetti.
He's nervous. But on the surface, he looks pretty calm and ready.
He looks calm and ready.
Listen. I didn't mean to give you mushrooms. Alright?
Well, I got some skeletons in my closet, so. I'm sorry, Mama.
My name is.
What?
My name is.
What?
Taylor Swift.
Just shake it off.
Shake it off?
Shake it off.
Romeo, I can't sing it. Romeo,
we could pay a lot. I stay out too late, man. I go on too many dates. At least that's what people say. That's what people say.
Uh-huh.
That's what people say.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's good.
Yeah. See, we killed it. And I realized an integral part of that game is having, like, a straight man.
Yeah.
So just having two people talking the lyrics of the same artist, like, you're not going to be able to have a conversation.
Yeah, it's tricksy. It's also a lot harder, I feel like, when you have a specific artist that you're supposed
harder,
to
better,
to.
Faster, stronger.
Yeah,
I like it. I just need to work up.
Maybe
on
I like it. The way you move on the floor. I cannot think in song
what?
Lyrics.
Like you an
ruined,
animal.
You ruined me. I want to you like an animal.
I want to feel you
from
the
inside.
So I was at my,
so I was walking down a park.
Was at my,
you've ruined me. I can't not think in song lyrics now.
I was at my cousin's wedding in Missouri.
I don't have any lyrics for that.
No, me neither.
And she had a really bizarre, like, playlist, and that song, I Want to Fuck You Like an Animal.
The Nine Inch Nails song
yeah.
that
yeah.
Trent Reznor wrote in the was it the daughter?
In the Meat Larker?
No, it was Charles Manson's, like, old house that he, like, currently
oh, really?
Co-labeled, or something like that.
So people are dancing. I don't like to dance in general, anyway.
That was at a wedding? That was playing at a wedding?
I
love
yeah.
to dance.
But that song? At a
See,
wedding?
I thought it was pretty
That's
odd.
One of those things that, like, if you're one of the friends at the wedding, you're like, huh. But if you're, like, one of the family members, you're like, it's time for me to, like, hide underneath
I
the
think
table.
That was the
oh,
idea.
Yeah.
I think they wanted to get rid of the older people.
Yeah, just it's time
well,
for you to leave.
But what happened
just
was
say, Margaret,
my
game.
Aunt comes out, and she's like, come on, Tommy, dance with me.
Oh,
no, not to this song.
Oh, she didn't understand.
Well, like, at what point in the night did that song just, come on?
I would say 11-ish? I was drunk.
Okay, well, that's at least an acceptable time to play. If it was the bride is coming down, and I'm like, oh,
yeah.
I remember, I think I was maybe underage at this time, too. We went to a bar afterwards, and I was so drunk, my cousin's like, come outside, I want to tell you something. I'm like, okay. And she's like, get in the car. I'm like, we're taking you home. I'm like, no, I'm going back in the bar. She's like, you are not going back in the bar.
Like,
all right.
God.
Fooled
off.
By your shenanigans.
Yeah.
So you got super into improv, and you're doing a lot of projects. How do you manage?
Oh, boy, that's the question, right? I think one of the biggest things in comedy, especially when you're producing comedy and also, like, creatively involved in comedy, you have to be careful to not burn yourself out. And that's been a battle I've been fighting for the last year and a half,
mm-hmm.
you know, professionally, like, producing comedy, but also, like, improvising, you know, and how to get my space and how to, like, make choices and be super intentional, which you have to, about having my, like, space for real life and space for comedy. Because what I've realized is if you're just doing comedy, comedy, comedy all the time, you end up basing your comedy off comedy, which no one wants to see. People
right.
want to see comedy derived from real life experiences,
right.
and that's when the humor is not only, like, more genuine, but way more rewarding. So I think I'm able to manage through having a few different things in my life that are completely not related in any way, shape, or form to comedy. My girlfriend is graduating Boston University this weekend, and, like, she's been, like, an awesome, like, completely separate influence. I have, like, a couple friends that I went to college with, but have, you know, they've seen me in improv shows, but they've never been improv friends. So I think just having, like, a very intentional, you know, array of things that have nothing to do with improv allow you to, like, sustain yourself.
You also drive a scooter? A moped?
A moped. You see, on the side of my helmet, it says, fuck
what's,
yeah, moped.
What's the difference between a moped
oh
and a scooter?
Oh, my God. Don't get me started. So scooters have, like, electric engines. Those are, like, Vespas. Those are, like, the bigger,
okay.
kind of bulkier ones that you see, like, trendy young professionals and moms riding around.
I don't really see moms on those things.
Go to California. You'll
okay.
see them.
That's my problem.
That's a problem. You're not in the right state.
Yeah.
So that's, like, and those are just, like, I just hate them. Those are scooters. Mopeds mopeds are, like, specifically manufactured between the, like, 1970 and, like, the late 80s.
What?
And, like, so it's, like, it was 20 years of time before, like, the scooter was invented where, like, it's, like, particularly, like, gas powered with, like, two-stroke engine oil. And, like, almost all of them are manufactured in Europe. And they're, like, a subset of the population now that, like, is really into them.
I remember I'd see them as a kid. And I think they were cool. And I always, like, comment to my dad or mom. And, like, they'd say, oh, you only need a permit to ride this. I don't know. I took them at their word for that.
I don't know if they meant you only need, like, your learner's permit to ride a moped, or so if you need an actual moped permit.
Yeah, so I don't have shit, first of all. So here's the thing, is that you're supposed to get it registered. You don't have to have any kind of a license, because it's technically a bicycle, for all intents and purposes, because it's under 50 cc's, the engine. It's like, moped engine's like 40, 49 cc's, so they just fall under that. So you don't need anything. You literally need the exact same thing you would need to ride a bicycle, which is nothing. But you're supposed to get your bike registered. But here's the funny thing, is that a ticket to get your bike registered is only $50, and to actually get it registered costs $25. So, like, for it to even be worthwhile to register it, you should at least get a ticket first. And I've never gotten a ticket.
That's how I feel about parking tickets during the day. Like, if you have to pay $35 at a garage, you might as well just risk it on the street.
Sometimes they tow your car.
They did, yeah.
That's
only if you're
thing.
In a tow zone. You gotta know those system.
I got towed by someone, like some stranger's house. Like
I got towed once. My one tire was just like an inch onto the curb by accident, and I got towed. It was I could park there. Yeah, it was terrible.
So mopeds are absolutely still like a thing, and there's like a total like subculture in Boston. There's Lucky Two Strokes, which is the a moped shop in Austin. There's like a gang of them. They literally have a gang. And they're just like the coolest, chillest people.
Do they like fight another moped gang?
No, like it's not
a patch in.
Yeah, it's not like a fight gang. Like they all have to, they all have like a specific tattoo that they get. And they
is it of a moped?
No, it's not.
Do you have a moped tattoo?
I don't. I'm not in Lucky. I'm not in the Uglies, is what they're called.
Oh. I remember Chris Griffin had that Current Eventual show.
Yeah.
And you were in one of them, I think.
No, I've actually been in, like, the majority of that. I produce it now, too, and I've been in it since its inception when Ron West did the workshop.
I was at one of them, and I thought, I think it was the first time I had seen you perform, and I was like, hey, that guy's good. And I think you're a good, like, actor, too.
Yeah.
But you're funny as well.
Thanks, man.
But then I was smoking a cigarette, either at intermission or after the show. And some guy had just worked on your moped outside or something.
That was my little friend Brandon. Yeah. He's in the Uglies.
And I was just like, this is such a bizarre thing that's happening, right? Like, he was revving the engine for you. And you're like checking it out. I'm like,
what is happening? An engine rever that like goes out?
Yeah, I have a friend I pay to accompany specifically to see my improv shows and then come outside and make me look really cool when he revs my engine. No, he's just one of my good friends. And another reason I love Improv Boston is I had my old moped was stolen. Like, February of last year.
Sad.
It was really sad. It was locked outside my house. I had a wire cable as opposed to a chain, and someone literally cut it in the middle of the night and just stole it and left the cut lock there. I was like, fuck you. I was like, thanks, dude.
So they, like, hot-wired it?
No, you don't need a key.
You don't need a key?
No, so they're either kickstart or pedal starts. That's how they all are.
This is really easy to steal.
Exactly. It's super easy.
So you have to know that almost.
You have to know that. But
yeah,
like anyone who wants to steal it would probably know it.
But it's like if you're a moped guy, stealing a moped is like a sad thing.
Yeah. You shouldn't turn on your own people. Maybe it was one of the Uglies.
No, it wasn't. We found this dude, which is a crazy story. But anyway, so that was stolen. So Improv Boston like pitched together and like got me a new little bit, which is the coolest thing. Same one I still have. But yeah, and then like a few months later, I get a call from my buddy, the one you saw revving my engine. That sounds kinky outside the theater that one night. And he was like, dude, like I got your moped. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, this was like a month later. And I was like, yeah, like apparently he was with this like 50 or 60 year old dude who was like really into like motorcycles. And he had a handgun in his glove box. And they like randomly like stumbled upon like what looked like my moped, my old one that was like really shittily spray painted with white, and they
disguise it.
Yeah, and so they rushed the dude. And they're like, "Dude, we know that's not your moped." And the guy's like, "What are you talking about? I just bought this." And he's like, "No, we know. Like, cut the shit. Like, listen, give this back to us." And
how did they really know though? Like, cause don't
because
don't a lot of mopeds
so
look alike?
They don't. Like,
no?
They're
okay.
No. So there's.
I'm just.
Moped
races. I don't know.
No, like it's.
I'm
no.
ignorant. Man.
They're like because I mean again they're from the 70s and 80s so like
so there's not that many.
There's not that many
in the world.
And, no, well especially in Boston and there's only so many people. Who ride them, and so like when you see like when a moped in Boston gets stolen, like someone in the community is gonna find it unless they're stealing it and they're sending it right to New York or something.
Yeah.
So yeah,
okay.
my buddy found it, and they basically like gave the guy like a super hard time. Ended up buying it back for like $75 because they couldn't technically prove that it was stolen, and it's in my basement now. So it's fine.
How much is a moped really worth?
So it depends when you're selling it. So if you're selling it right now, you can literally sell a moped for $800 or $900. But you can buy them and sell them in the winter. You can buy them in the winter for like $200 or $300.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all time of year. People don't realize they want a moped until it's like the weather's nice.
Yeah,
and they're like,
that
wow,
makes
this
sense.
Would be cool. So if you get one like in December, like you'll save a shit ton of money. So,
it's a no.
That's
it's a no, listeners.
Yeah, now you know.
So you're part of a bunch of projects. You want to talk about some of them?
Yeah, for sure. I'll talk about the most pressing one, which is my musical OkCupid date, which is like super fun. So it's Jacob Russell Snyder, who's a music director at Improv Boston and recently graduated Emerson, who's moving back to Oakland in about a month now. And it's kind of like our final hurrah with this project. And Jacob approached me about it a year ago. We performed it at the 2014 Boston Comedy Arts Festival. And it's a 20 to 25 minute sketch about just one of his crazy OkCupid dates. And like, it's so ridiculous, but it's absolutely factually accurate, which is ridiculous. It's just like the most like crazy part about it. He literally, I'm not going to spoil the story or anything because that's like part of the laughs, but so you'll just have to come see it this Saturday at 7 p.m. at Improv Boston.
Is tomorrow night?
Yeah, I guess. No, sorry. Oh my gosh, I messed up. It's the 23rd, so next Saturday.
Cool.
We're like all really excited about it, and we're throwing an improv component into it, and all the improv that we're doing around the show is going to be, OkCupid online dating based. So we're gonna have like dating games with the audience and like some musical improv too. So it's gonna be super fun, and it's one of those things that's been a long time coming, and this is kind of like the capstone for it because he's leaving. So super excited to put it on one more time.
Do you play in a band or anything?
I don't. Do I look like I do?
No.
Well, just because you're a musical person.
You think, right?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck, I want to. I can't find people that perfectly line up. Oh, here's one thing I do. I'm in a two-man musical project. I forgot to mention that. Nate Schaefer, who's also a music director at Improv Boston. Sam, I got an in with the music director, so I know the right crowd.
Mike is a big music guy, too.
He is, absolutely. Yeah. He started, like, the Second City program. So Nate Schaefer and I have a two-man musical. It's called Foiled, the musical, and we're doing a comedy lab set, a couple comedy labs in July. And the premise is basically, it's literally a one-man show, and he's playing the keys. And he kind of narrates, and then I, like, help create it. And it's, like, a 25-minute show where I'm, at some point, creating a narrative where there's a hero, a damsel, and a villain. And I have to play all three parts, and then it gets ridiculous.
That sounds, yeah.
So you're singing all three parts?
Yeah, so I'm literally, like, I'm playing all three characters and singing, like, a three-piece song as each character. And it gets insane, but we
that
will.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
that's tough.
So that's, like, that's one of those things that's, like, super ambitious, but, like, kind of the direction I want to go in with my improv.
Yeah.
I like that. Where does that happen?
That's at Improv Buzz. That's going to be in the Comedy Lab in July.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah, I'm super excited about that. We've been working hard on that. And it's one of those projects that, you know, there's not too much musical improv in the Boston comedy scene, but
I'd be as a decent amount.
Yeah,
I mean, they have
yeah,
class.
Like
and
big on it.
I know in the main stage, it just there's usually a song or
absolutely.
Two or
and
three.
And Family Show is, you know, definitely the most music-heavy resident cast. Face Off, too.
I can sing, kind of, but I can only sing songs I know. Like, if you were, like, just start playing the piano, I'd be like, what the fuck is happening?
Yeah, what's going on? No, and it's weird, because I'm, like, more naturally inclined to music, so it works better for me. Like, I find myself, if I'm just doing normal, like, let's say a montage, it's so much harder for me to get emotionally invested
really?
In my characters. But if there's music, like, suddenly I'm like, I know exactly what my character wants, and I know exactly how I feel about it, and I just go. And it's like, I don't know how to explain it, but it's way easier for me.
Nate Lopez told me this little hint. Start off with a little dance, and it gives you a couple seconds to think of
it's true. And Nate does his dance.
Yeah.
He does his dance. He does his ditties.
And do you also rap?
I have a SoundCloud profile where I have a bunch of songs that I wrote while I was studying abroad in Istanbul. So yeah, I have rap songs.
Cool.
And yeah, Johnny Lopez, your director, and I, we just freestyle sometimes. It's just fun. Yeah, we do stuff. Now Tom's thinking he wants me to freestyle on the podcast.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, God damn it.
What's something in this room?
You gotta give me a beat if I'm gonna do this, by the way.
I have freestyle beats.
Yeah. No acapella rap here.
This is really high pressure. yeah, I used to do this way more, but now I suck at it, so.
Alright, you think of something, Laura. I'm going to bring up
I'm gonna
freestyle.
Think of a thing.
Commence banter.
All right. So this, Tom, do you have this queued up enough?
No, give me a second.
No.
Keep banter.
Let's do a little dance over here.
Let's literally do things that the audience
that
can't
see.
So first of all, I really actually wanted to do this. I wanted to compliment your blouse. Is it a blouse or
is
it a dress?
Thank you. It used to be a dress. It like shrunk in the wash.
It's really
so now
small.
It's more of like a shirt.
If you were wearing that without pants, it would be like
scandalous. Exactly.
That was good. So that's nice too. And then yeah, it's just like the whole ensemble of your shoes with that. Like it's a good like you're exploring like the red magenta color palette.
Thank
really.
You. Alrighty. So your suggestion.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is that as loud as it goes?
Is that as loud as it goes?
It's the stupid fan just kicked in too.
The suggestion is clock.
Mm.
What time is it, guys?
Mm.
I'm not freestyling.
Oh,
yeah. I don't know why you're asking me.
I thought you were both freestyling.
I can't freestyle.
Okay, I like it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, come on. Phew. Here we go. Yo. I got a bone I wanna start picking while the little hands on the clock keep ticking. I'm thinking like a man who's got nothing else to say. I guess you'll find me down in Mexico by the bay. I drink my sorrows away and wait for another day when I feel okay enough to say, leave it gay. No, it's okay. I'll embrace my inner self and then I'll bask in the riches that are my wealth. I'm sitting here on the podcast with Tom Boyer, feeling a little bit like Dave Sawyer, traveling around the world doing improv, feeling pretty good, but man, kind of like a sloth, cause when you do too much improv, you sometimes feel like a little slug. You're going so far, but you ain't got legs, kinda like Aladdin's Jafar. That's right, but I'm feeling pretty good tonight, and as the beat doubles down, I'm feeling pretty tight. So if you wanna do it, look into my eyes, and you will see something that you could only surmise, something that you would have to feel surprised when you saw how sick I was, but that's kinda cool. So bringing it back to clocks, and bringing it back to cocks, I don't wanna talk about roosters, won't wanna talk about dicks, wanna talk about improv, and I got a guy I like named Tom.
Yeah!
Or something.
That was good. That was impressive.
It's been a long time. I used to really do... It's one of the things like running where I regret stopping doing it because it was really fun when I was actually good at it. But now
I really want to get into it. I took the North Coast class.
You did? Yeah, I did too with Ray Rowe and Dougie.
I took it with...
I saw them perform recently.
Evan
it
and Kayla.
All right.
But it was... It was so impressive,
but it's
so hard for me. How do you get ahead of yourself and keep with...
It's like, it gets to a point where, like, I set up the verse couplet in my mind just while you guys were talking. And then after that, what I'm literally doing is I'll just randomly rattle off a word. And then as soon as I say that word, my mind is thinking about the word that rhymes with that word.
Yeah.
And then everything else that leads up to that is literally just like me spitballing. So you just have to land. So yeah, you're like choosing, then landing, and everything in between is kind of just like you try to string them together. And that's what really separates like the good people from the bad people is how coherent that like stringing together is. So
now the fans are So where you are now in your improv career, how do you feel and where do you ultimately want to take it?
Yeah, that's the question, right? And it's like such a hard thing.
And if
like,
you could do this in a freestyle rap, no.
Explain your life pursuit.
Yeah. Freestyle rap that's also only other song lyrics, preferably.
Jesus.
Yeah.
I would just do Eminem. That's cool. man, it's such a hard question. I'm like, pursuing improv solely as improv is like not something that's ever really interested me. Like, I don't have intentions to like try to go to Chicago and get on like a second city touring company.
But you are quite successful at a young age.
Yeah, no, it's true. But like I like one of the reasons I'm so like into Improv Boston is like the applications of improv. So I think the things that like I really see as like longer term impacts for me are like finding the social applications of improv and doing work like that. Like I'm currently actually working with Ivy Street School for their extravaganza, which is in June. And Ivy Street is basically a school, basically serving developmentally delayed or impaired, some kind of brain damage students. And I'm basically working with them once a week, doing improv, writing sketches, and we're going to do a show together. So I think like that kind of stuff, where you see improv like breaking down people's barriers and making people laugh together, it's like super powerful. But I do love performing, but I also love like dramatic and like acting. So I don't really know what I want to do yet. I know I want to be in comedy because I enjoy the process of making people laugh, but like what that means specifically, like I have not figured out. So I wish I could give you a better answer than that. And whatever it is, I'll probably end up leaving Boston in a couple of years to pursue it. But for now, it's like just staying in this world that I've found, you know. So.
Cool.
Yeah.
Do you have anything you want to talk about that we haven't touched on?
I think also, this podcast is called Improv Saved My Life, right? So I think, it lends well to, a conversation regarding, more difficult things. And I think specifically in our community in Boston, there's a lot of people that, they cling to our community because of, the other personalities that are there and, how much fun they are and how, engaging and accepting they are. But I think there's a lot of stuff that, people have dealt with. Improv has helped them through. For you, it's drinking, right?
Right.
Yeah, and I don't know. So one of my big projects I want to do is create a scrapbook that basically just completely anonymous, but had super vulnerable things. I don't know. I just think improv can be so much more effective when it's emotionally driven. Everyone knows that, but to have performers shop swapping stories about how the art form has helped them through really tough things, I think is super important. And even just stuff for me major transitions, big breakups and big life changes, it's one of those consistent things, you know. Even in college, I realized that if I was stressed or if I was dealing with some shit I couldn't figure out as I was graduating, I didn't know what I was doing in my life. To be able to do some improv where you're so in the moment and you're so in tune to what you're doing is so incredibly valuable.
Yeah.
It
could take you out of a shitty, if you have a shitty day and you have, good scene, you still get that high off that scene, and it does pay off, you know.
It's true, and you can't do improv and be bothered by other things at the same time. You can have it affect your general demeanor, which happens a lot. You know, you have days when you show up, you're performing and working with people is the last thing you want to do.
But having said that, a lot of those times you go in with that attitude, as soon as you start, it's out of your head.
It's true. Yeah, and I think laughter has the ability to do that. And so I think one of my pausing wishes for our community is just that we'd be able to be more real with our improv. I think especially on Facebook, there's just so much shit on there. It's so many bits and stuff that's funny, but come on guys. And I think I don't know. I hope the improv community is able to find some kind of connection between being funny but also making time for the real, you know, and really figuring out how we can create even better comedy when we're fusing those two things together. And I think it's a super important conversation and something that I personally want to get way more involved in. So we'll see where that takes us in the future, but yeah.
Cool. So what do you have for upcoming shows?
Yeah. So tomorrow I'm in a family show in All Access Improv at Improv Boston. So 4 p.m., 6 p.m. It's going to be a little marathon, a couple hours there. Next Saturday, was it the 23rd, is my musical OK Cupid date, so super excited about that. I did my bump show for the month, so I'll be in some more bump shows in June, and then I have the Foiled two-man musical thing in July, taking over Comedy Lab. So those are kind of the up-and-coming shows right now.
Nice.
Yeah. I randomly have an audition for Moonbox, I think it's called. It's
What's Moonbox?
I said it might not even be what it's called. I don't know, but it's a super legit theater company.
Cool.
They perform the Huntington and shit.
In
Boston. They're
serious ensemble. Theater,
yeah, exactly. And so I was just why not? I saw the audition posted on Stage Source, so I'm just gonna go do I'm gonna go sing 34 bars for some strangers tomorrow. No big deal.
Yeah, well I said this earlier, but I was actually very impressed by your acting skills.
Yeah.
The current eventual state
as
I am.
That was
good luck with that. Laura, what do you have coming up?
just the stuff that you mentioned. Yeah, Hooverville is going to be good. I'm, like, super excited for that. That, again, is Fridays next month. And Improv Jones, we do every other Saturday, and we have this collaboration with Mass Mouth, which I'm super excited about, where people get up and tell a story, and then we do improv inspired by that story, and then there's another storyteller, and we do improv inspired by that. So it's a lot of fun.
As for me, I have two monthly shows now that are, well, three if you count the one with the Eagle Comp. So, new show is On Point Improv. It's monthly at the Cambridge YMCA. It's geared towards new teams and experienced teams that want to try out something new.
I want to check that out.
Yeah.
It's fun, guys.
That next one is Monday, I want to say the 15th of June. We also have Indian Night at the Middle East.
I performed at the... You remember? I was in the Tall Prof set.
Yeah.
Sasha.
That was great.
Yeah, dude, that was such a fun show.
The next one, the May one, is going to be on Memorial Day. It's going to be a variety show. So we're going to have some musical acts. We're going to have some stand-ups. We're going to have some improv. We're going to have some sketch. It should be good.
And
awesome.
I can attest to the quality of the music that's going to be there. It's real good.
Yeah.
It's also just a super cool, like, setting.
It is,
even though the stage is raised, like, it caters to, and they have a bar in there. It's just, like, it's a good vibe there.
Yeah. Yeah, I love, like, performing there and being there. Robot Arms will be there on Memorial Day.
Nice.
I just remember the one show we did. I literally was crawling into the audience, literally on my stomach, like army crawling, and then overlaps. that happens. That's the kind of stuff that you'll see there, I guess.
And then finally we have What Else You Gonna Do Wednesday, which is the show Eagle Come produces. That is the second Wednesday of every month at Maggie's Lounge in Quincy. That's about it. Hopefully me and Laura get on house teams.
Yeah.
Oh, do you have auditions now?
We had auditions earlier today. We just came from auditions.
Hi. You need a beer.
Yeah, so thank you for giving me this beer, because I was a pile full of, like, just
what?
After nerves, post nerves.
Pile of post nerves.
Yeah.
And they dropped a bomb on us that it's normally, well, for the last couple of runs, it's been four teams, which increases your chances. They're cutting it down to three teams for the next run.
Oh, shit.
So that's,
yeah,
like,
which is terrifying.
Eight spots probably going. And we both just recently made it, so we're still in that could make it, could not make it level.
How long are the runs?
8 weeks.
Yeah, but he said that this particular run is going to be a little bit shorter, actually. So if we don't get on, we'll have another chance soon to just get up and try again.
That's awesome.
All right. Well, thanks, Mac.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, thank you so much.
And thanks for listening.
Bye.